It's a great pleasure for me to introduce our speaker for today, Michelle Sorensen. I'm looking forward to her presentation, Educating for Awareness and Understanding of LGBT Issues, a teacher education course at the University of Regina. Michelle Sorensen is a PhD student in the Faculty of Education at the University of Regina. She comes from a background in social work with a focus on child protection, and more recently from studying teacher education at the University of British Columbia. Her current research interest involves the contribution of high-performance coaching skills to the teacher education practicum experience in terms of increased sensitivity to social awareness and responsibility at the level of body. She has a world-traveling 18-year-old daughter whom she is encouraging to remain in Canada, pay her tuition, and study marine biology at the University of Victoria in the fall. Welcome, Michelle.
So I've been told that if I get so nervous I have to lie down here, you'll still be able to hear me. I hope not for that, but you just never know. I guess I'm feeling a bit emotional from your candles of joy and concern. And I think as I get older, one of the things that happened is that my body is incredibly affected. So I apologize in advance for some warbles or maybe some tears. Who knows? But I'd like to say thank you very much for inviting me to come to speak to your fellowship. And I extend a special thank you to Dr. Helen Christensen for her invitation and encouragement to come today. Yes. When talking with Sandra just briefly, I thanked her for your openness. And she remarked that perhaps one day we won't need to focus so much on an openness around queer stuff. But that hasn't happened yet. So here I go. I hope to spend some time talking about the course I taught this past winter at the University of Regina's in the teacher education program, to describe some of the experiences of the students in the class, to talk a bit about what they see themselves doing as a result of having taken the class, and to finish with some thoughts about why a course like this might continue to be important in a teacher education program. And afterwards, I hope there'll be some time for you to ask me questions. This course was conceived by Dr. James McNinch, the current dean at the Faculty of Education. He did this as a way to highlight and work with the idea that LGBTQI teachers and students, both in K-12 classrooms and in education programs, continue to experience harassment and bullying in a way that is persistent, despite the concerted effort of some to diminish the unjust treatment of those who do not identify as straight. One of the things I discovered after being with the students for about a week or so was that many of them had not encountered the long acronym LGBTQI. And so I've made a commitment when next I teach this course to avoid certain presumptions. And so for those here who might be some of like some of them, this acronym stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, queer, and intersex. For the rest of my sharing, I will use the word queer in place of the acronym. One, because it's easier for me to say. And the other reason is because the word queer denotes the idea of something off-center. And by those who reject traditional gender identities as a broader, less conformist, and deliberately ambiguous alternative. This course, Schooling and Sexual Identities, is a fourth year elective course in the teacher education program and is most frequently taken by students who have finished their 4-month internship. For those of you who don't know, one of the unique things about the University of Regina's teacher education program is right from the start, they are in the classroom. And all of this leads to this 4-month internship. And so the students in the class have gone through the program and are at their final semester before graduation. Two of the students told me they took the class because they knew me and they wanted to know me better. They flattered my ego. Most said that they were interested in taking the course because in the course of their 4 years at the university, they'd really never in a deliberate way been introduced to this topic. And so they had an awareness that they were going into classrooms and a community that is pluralistic, and that the expectation would be to understand how to work with queer kids and alongside queer teachers. Two of them said that it fit nicely with their final course for the term, and so they just took it. What I'd like to say is by the end, I wholeheartedly believe there are 25 allies for queer teachers and queer students, and so I count that a success. The rationale for this course includes the idea that among the important issues that relate to the practice of teaching is an understanding of the constructs of oppression and how this type of understanding might trouble or disrupt notions of heteronormativity. Heteronormativity is the belief that sexual and marital relations are most fitting between people of opposite sexes. It may also be understood as an institution that works to ensure that queer people do not feel too comfortable to talk about their lives, their loves, and as such keeps them on the fringes of what's considered normal. The coursework was designed to help student teachers learn to work against some prejudices and in turn lead to advocating for disenfranchised sexual minority groups. In this course, we use a variety of resources to build on this rationale, and to do this, we explored pedagogical and instructional implications for teachers working with queer students and queer teachers. This term, there are 25 students, as I said, and the idea was that the students would begin to understand the complexities of sexual identity through an exploration of myriad social, cultural, personal, and interpersonal contexts, and to examine what happens when we categorize people. We began to try to understand the categories that we ourselves live with and by, and why we position ourselves in some of these places. What became clear is that many of our own categorical understandings provide us with a kind of safety that we may not always be conscious of. So we looked at categories like teacher, student, mother, sister, son, man, brother, girlfriend, lover, boyfriend, daughter, Christian, Roman Catholic, atheist, and friend. The safety categories produced and provided a kind of normativity. That was what we found out, that we're comfortable calling ourselves in certain categories. And to call ourselves outside of those categories becomes a little more tricky. We also consider these categories beyond the personal, looking at the institutional and the roles that institutions play and what they bring to bear in terms of comfort and exclusions almost simultaneously. We began to understand the ways categorical constructions have worked to distance or oppress other people, and in this case, queer folks. As I thought about how to prepare and teach the course, I was naturally guided by those syllabi that had been previously used. James McNinch taught this class for a number of winters. And I also tried to infuse the course with ideas from my own reading and my own lived experiences. The class met twice a week, and for one of those meetings, students chose an article from a list that I provided them, some very dense academic reading. Some of them resisted and pushed back against the call to think deeply, but they met the challenge in remarkable ways. And we had some things, you know, articles that talked about how to disrupt heteronormativity, how to set up a classroom so that all children feel welcome. And the provocations were a way that the students could, in fact, live through the material, the ideas, and to think about how they, as teachers, are going to go into the classrooms and do this work, not just cerebrally, but also actively. In addition, it was very interesting, the students were asked to write autobiographically. Now, there is a scholar named Janet Miller, and she writes about the folly of asking people to write autobiographically, especially students in education programs, because if they think about what they think you want them to write, they become that. And so as a counter to that, I used a method that Dr. William Pinar, he's at UBC, a method called Carrere, which asks students to find an education moment in the past. Think about it. What was happening? Who was there? The things that they did, the things they didn't do. And to take that moment, that same moment, into the future to see themselves. And what do they look like? What do they feel like? What do they act like? And then it asks them to come to the present moment and think about who they are in that moment. And finally, the fourth sort of turn is to ask them to think of all the three pictures that they've created through this writing and to contemplate what they might become. And so it's kind of a creative practice that doesn't ask for a finished product. And I think it was effective in helping them to consider where they are and where they want to be. And although there was no requirement to talk about sexual identity, most of the students took this writing assignment to explore themselves in relation to sexuality. Their writing articulated and explored their interest in how they came to situate themselves in a particular moment or moments within their own sexualities. And as they came to know the complexity of their own sexual subjectivities, they became quite interested in the constitution of other kinds of selves, and in doing this, developed a greater capacity for empathy for those not aligned with their own lived sexual experiences. Their writing and sharing demonstrated that it is possible, through some amount of reflection, to understand what it is like to be unable to talk about a particular kind of love, desire, or attraction. Secondly, this autobiographical writing also seemed to lead to a deeper understanding of some of the consequences attached to disclosing a certain kind of love. They began to understand that queer kid walking from one end of the school to the other, just wanting the day to be over, wanting not to be noticed. When in high school, I suppose when I was in high school, I wanted to be noticed. I wanted to stand out. But they were able to imagine what it felt like not to be able to say that they had a crush, a same-sex crush, when often girls and boys are talking about their attractions so freely and readily, or the lack of them. I tried to stay away from too many scary statistical facts, though there are many, that there is an increase in suicide rates of queer youth, and bullying, and marginalization, and ostracization. The reason I didn't do that is because I've learned in the time that I've been teaching in the in-teacher education program that asks students to examine themselves and change, is that by scaring people, people don't change. It wasn't my hope to actually change anybody. I'm not that powerful. I wanted them to do something that might open their hearts further. They were already quite open. And their minds to consider difference beyond their own, as well as their own capacity to differ. In addition to the provocations and the autobiographical writing, the students had lots and lots of reading and reading responses to complete. And as I said in the class feedback I received at the end of the term, the reading was one of the things the students found a bit excessive. Too bad. I, however, felt that the students gained...
Could you repeat that last
one? Oh, wait a minute, this is being podcast, heavens. And they're lovely students. They were asked to consider ideas which were new, how their own educational experiences tied into the reading, how they were challenged, and how what they read might have an impact on their own teaching. And finally, what about the reading continued to trouble them in terms of how they might address these issues in their own classrooms? Students were consistently worried about what would parents say? What will school board say? What will the Catholic school board say if I have a book in my classroom called Ashes to Mums? One dad, two dad, red dad, blue dad. So we talked about how they could feel comfortable. And I said, you don't have to start by hanging the gay flag outside of your classroom. That may be too much in a community of 500. But when you start talking about families, and you talk about it, you can talk about a mom and a dad, of course, but you can talk about aunties and uncles, foster parents, caregivers, and including in that two mothers, two fathers, as a beginning. and also talked about the importance of relational work. As you become comfortable and known to a community for who you are and what you represent, then it becomes easier to talk about these tricky and complex issues. The third component was an invitation for a variety of speakers to come, one of whom was Dr. James McNinch, the Dean of the Faculty of Education, a transgendered person called Harvey, and a Cree elder, Noel Starblanket. James talked about the need for teacher education students to become familiar with ways to appropriately and adequately meet the needs of queer students. And he did this by sharing many of his own life experiences. Our second guest, Harvey, talked about how difficult it was for him to have been born female, but to feel and to live as a man. Harvey shared many of his experiences as a student in the K-12 education system and offered many helpful suggestions for how teachers might help a student like him feel loved and accepted in a classroom. The third guest, Elder Starblanket, discussed the ways in which two-spirited people were once thought of as unique and were respected because of their capacity to negotiate both the male and female worlds. He suggested that their current lack of esteem is a result of colonization, but left us with some hope that things were changing there also. The final assignment for the class was open-ended and called for an amalgam of their relevant life experiences, their teacher education experience, and their experiences of this course into something that would be of benefit to them as they consider taking up positions in Regina and other Saskatchewan communities. So I didn't bring them up, but I asked them to do things that were not going to be necessarily meaningful for me, but for them. Some of the students created resource packages for their, I'll call them their allies, and we put them up on UR courses, and they downloaded them or printed them off, and they can use them. Some people, there was an occasion in Weyburn where there was a person coming there to talk about against abortion. And this person also was talking anti-gay stuff. So one woman in the class asked for an extension so that she could go and participate in that and then write about it, which is very interesting. And, you know, as we become new at something and we're really passionate at the beginning, some of their advocacy said things like, well, this is terrible. You know, we should just, our community is bad to have these people come, this person come. But as we discussed it sort of more openly and a bit more creatively, we discovered that these kinds of situations under the heading of free speech are quite wonderful. And in this case, she saw her community, the community of Weyburn, respond in a way that was quite proactive. Of course, they were inviting of the person to come to talking about pro-life, but they weren't happy about someone coming to talk about anti-gay stuff. And so they had a peaceful rally. And what it showed her and increased her pride in her place was that, and she hadn't known it before, was that there was this incredible compassion for the other. And so that was wonderful. And so I've tried to encourage them, you know, when they feel like they're getting really worked up, to stop and think, what does this make possible first? Not always go to what is made impossible. This is a painting, and it says you'll never find the rainbow if you're looking down. But and we're small enough, I'll just pass these around. There are two, you can't tell the gender of these two people. And she was quite a nice artist, and she gave it to me as a gift. And so she wrote a paper to go alongside this about, you know, if we could look at each other just as people and not always attach a meaning to that, it might be wonderful. So Ingrid, I'll start with you there. Then another woman did a collage and talked about the constructs of gender, that we are born with a particular sex, but a scholar, Judith Butler, says that we perform our gender, and that sex and gender aren't the same thing. So she talked about, you can read it through what she's added there. In the introduction to a book that was edited by Dr. James McNinch and Mary Cronin, I Could Not Speak My Heart, I came across a poem that I would like to read as a way of demonstrating some of the feel for what happened amongst these students, and to end what I hope might be an ongoing conversation with you. The poem was written by David L. McIntyre. I did not speak my heart. I did not speak my heart. I passed in silence, relentless silence, and watched my spirit ebb and cease to flow. I could not speak my heart, alone and fearful in isolation, afraid that knowing me, you turn away. I would not speak my heart, the inner striving, relentless striving, to live the truth, yet not give truth a voice. Herein, I speak my heart. The last thing that I want to say is that I deliberately did not tell the students about my own lifestyle for two reasons. One is I thought once they knew, they'd start telling me everything they thought I wanted to hear. We had some open and rich discussions, and they were uncensored, and they were quite lovely. Their struggles were amazing to be a part of. And in the end, I let them know that I'm a gay woman. And it was important, and I'll just sort of briefly say, there was an incident where I didn't tell them the truth up front, and I felt quite bad about that. And so I don't know if I would do that as a matter of course, because that's not really why. And I also didn't want them to think I had some gay agenda. I really didn't. And it is about how can we together find a way to live amongst each other and not always noticing the differences so readily. So I want to tell you it's been an honor to have this opportunity to speak here. And thank you for your openness, your interest, and your care and compassion for people of all kinds. So thank you very much. Right. Hello again. Do you have any questions? I felt like I finally got over the warbly voice and I was just ready to sit down and feel happy about that.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It's interesting to hear how these issues are moving forward and becoming public and accepted. This is related to your talk, but it's also related to a news item some time back. In the discussion of intersex students and children who haven't yet, they know who they are, but nobody else is so sure. Mm-hmm. They had what seemed like a decision somewhere in the education system to have bathrooms that these kids could use that were separate from the others. Do you know if that has actually gone through, or was that just a suggestion that...
In the K-12 classrooms, I don't know, but I do know that there is a gender-neutral bathroom at the three gender-neutral bathrooms at the University of Regina.
Just with the picture and a slash between the male and female pictures?
Yes, and I just think it's gender-neutral.
Yeah, so anybody would be using it, right. And it wouldn't be identified specifically.
No.
Yeah, it just seems that that's a really important thing to move forward with, but...
Douglas Park. Oh, I didn't know. I had interns there. I didn't. Well, that's good. So Douglas Park Elementary has a gender-neutral bathroom.
I just add that SIAS does not, and I lobbied them.
I actually work for education, and I have the pleasure of just doing communications consultant work with the ministry on these nine joint-use schools that we're building in Saskatchewan by 2017. And that's one of the questions I had. I don't really have much ability to influence decision-making, but I was part of a week-long design workshop in Saskatoon, and this came to me, that is that possible for elementary schools, and is that even part of the thinking of the public right now? So Douglas Park does have one, and can anybody talk to me after and just tell me about this, and I can figure out maybe how a way I can bring that into the conversation if it isn't already, because I don't know the design details, but I would be very interested in influencing that at this time if I could.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name's Jane. I'm so delighted that you're here with us today and that there is such a course happening at U of R. I wish it was, you know, more widespread. And that's my question is, how can we go from reaching only 25 students to making this a required course for all students? And I just want to share quickly that, you know, when we started doing First Nations education, I was so upset because in the high school where my children were, the First Nations Studies class was scheduled opposite the French course, which is a requirement for anyone who wanted to go to university. And I wonder, you know, if that kind of thing is happening at the university level with your course. It's scheduled in a way that, you know, the mainstream people maybe can't get, I mean, 25, please, come on. You know, can't we do better than that?
I said, well, after James, I don't know, after James, I don't know what I've done again. Is it working now? Okay, after James McNinch spoke to the class, many of the students raised their hands when he asked for comments and said, why do you not make this a mandatory class? And I think I tend to agree with him about why it isn't mandatory, but I'll say that and then I'll say something else. I think what people have found is that when you make certain things mandatory, the openness isn't always there. And I think when you demand, and I think there may be some of the same resistance as there was to treaty education, you know, and teachers were saying, well, if I don't have First Nations Métis people in my classroom, why on earth would I be teaching this? And I think that that has changed significantly, and I think it might be the same. If I don't have queer kids in my class, why do I need to attend to this openly? The thing I will say that this teacher education has done since 2009 is it did a whole shift in programming, and they went from a program that was, they called it technical rational, to one of social justice. And within that change, in every class that the students take, the educational course, studies courses anyway, there is a hope that they will be introduced to myriad issues, and one of which would include LGBTQI issues. And so I think that's the best answer that I can give. I think there is a concerted effort to be attentive to this as an issue, which is good news.
Thank you very much.
Thank
it was
you.
Very powerful. And I hope you can come back another time.
Thank you, me too.